Overhead Door Company, the original garage door company, serving you for over 90 years. Call 843-767-0028 or overheaddoorco.com. Overhead Door Company of Charleston, proud to open hour two of the Morrow Midday Show.
This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Back again. Sadie's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back? 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 Guess who's back?
Second hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Hey, don't forget, our weekly pick'em contest is back. Make your picks by 5 p.m. Friday, and you could be the winner of a Fan Zone gift card. Just head over to charlestonsportsradio.com. You can make your picks today. I'm curious how that works for week one. You have to make your picks by 5 p.m. on Friday, so it's all just the games on Saturday for this week. Because we have some real interesting games tomorrow night and even Friday. Have a couple of interesting games. Best week one in college football. I don't think this is hyperbole. I think it's the best week one we've ever had. It is the record for most matchups between Power 5 schools in week one. It's probably up there for even ranked games. We got a couple of good, you know, ranked matchups. And it begins tomorrow night. Ohio State, Minnesota, very intriguing, but more locally, Coastal Carolina and the Citadel beginning at 6 o'clock over on the city tomorrow at yours truly as we kick off another season. But our weekly pick'em contest is back. Make your picks by 5 p.m. on Friday each week and you can win a gift card to the Fan Zone. Just head over to charlestonsportsradio.com and make your picks today. Every Wednesday at this time we talk some golf with our resident golf expert Jeremy Schilling, who you can find on Twitter at @jschill. He writes for PGA Magazine and he's with us now. Jeremy, good afternoon. How are you?
I am well, Luke. Glad to be here. I have a quick question. Is the loser of Georgia-Clemson out?
Yeah, we've been talking about this.
The college football playoff?
I don't think so. I understand why it's built that way, and part of it is to further build up this game. What I've said, my opinion, is I just think it removes the wiggle room. I don't think it removes the teams from the playoff. It just removes that buffer zone where they may not be able to afford a loss the rest of the way. But if they lose Saturday, I don't think it's any sort of end to their season.
That's fair. All right. Sounds reasonable.
Yeah.
Anyway, you and I had a fun conversation on Sunday.
Yes. So I guess I've become very predictable because you said you already knew where I was going to go. Sunday, we have another playoff. And what, a six-hole playoff again? This is crazy to me. I don't get what's going on around here. But Patrick Cantlay wins a six-hole playoff at the BMW Championship over DeChambeau. Another week, another wild playoff, another wild finish. Break it down. What stood out to you? Why did it happen like this? Tell us everything from Sunday.
Why did it happen is that these guys were deadlocked and it was a two-man show and they put on a heck of a show. And Patrick Cantlay put on, have you ever broadcasted a game, Luke, and you're trying to figure out some way of describing something which every listener can understand, but it's a very technical thing to whatever sport you were covering?
Yes. Yes, I know what you're talking about.
Patrick Cantlay had the single greatest putting performance in the 18-year history of shot length. Now, what that means is he gained 14 and a half strokes on the green over the rest of the field. So over the 69 guys, Patrick Reed was not there last week. So for the 68 other guys, he bested them on the field average by 14 and a half shots.
Wow.
He was 41 of 41 for putts inside of 5 feet. He was 10 of 12 on putts from 10 to 15 feet. And he gained a new nickname in Patty Ice, which he didn't even have until Sunday. No wonder other announcers and fans are like, where did that nickname come from? Came from just random fans. What an extremely gutsy performance by him to get into the playoff, making that birdie on 18, and ultimately rebounding, you know, through some ups and downs during the playoff. And while Bryson, meanwhile, you got these two heavyweights, and we're going to talk Bryson here in a second because there's some big news involving Bryson, but when you look at, you know, it's two completely different personalities, two completely different types of players. And for Patrick to answer every single time, and then for Bryson to drive it in the water on 18 during one of the playoff holes, and to get up and down for par, just the clutch putting was amazing. Kudos to Bryson, too. I mean, look, his chipping shake, he's got to fix that for this week, but still, gutsy performances by both. Somebody had to win it, and it wound up being Patrick Cantlay.
Yeah, wild six-hole playoff. You mentioned DeChambeau, not only the loss there in the playoff on Sunday, but then we get this news about the Brooksy chance now. We had Dean Blandino on last hour talking about potential rule changes for the NFL college football. What about this potential rule change in golf? I know you said to me you are 100% against this, even though you're 100% in favor of this. So explain that to me.
Yes. Okay. So I was bullied as a kid. I'm still recovering from the scar tissues of it, not the physical, but just the emotional and the mental.
Right.
Clearly, Bryson's got something going on. Clearly, yelling Brooksy in a backswing, which happened during one hole of the playoff, is inexcusable. Clearly, the fan who came up to him on the rope line after the playoff was done, as detailed in Kevin Van Valkenburgh's amazing story for ESPN.com that I highly recommend every single person out there read. That stuff is inexcusable. It needs to stop. It's a whole bunch of words I can't say on this radio station. But the problem I have with this rule is when you term and make Brooksy into a curse term, which essentially this is now, right? If I called somebody a bleeping bleeping, I have the right to be expelled. Right, Luke?
Right.
So now we're turning Brooksy into a word that could be grounds for expulsion. Where does this go from here? Like, is you stink at putting about to become a word that's going to be used? I feel for Bryson. There's no easy answer. And you've heard Cantlay, Morikawa, and Rory all talk today in the pressers, even in just the first three out of the gate this morning, that they're a little kind of on the fence. Because Bryson has brought this on himself, which we've detailed. Brooks has made it very clear that he does not condone any yelling of anything at Bryson or anybody else right before or during a golf swing. And yet, how do you stop somebody from yelling Brooksy as Bryson walks down the fairway? And how do you go through a crowd and then identify who is the person who yelled Brooksy? And what happens? I can tell you from being at Liberty National, this could have totally have happened, where you got Kepka on one hole, Bryson on the other. You've got fans that can cheer on multiple holes. And now a Brooksy chant comes out correctly, legally, for Brooks Kepka. And some marshals or volunteers come trying to figure out who it was because they think it was aimed at Bryson. To me, I am 100% in favor of all heckling, teasing, and bullying ceasing. But I do not see how this is enforceable. I do not see how this is policeable. And I think it's going to lead to a mess that will lead to some people who had every right to say what they wanted to say kicked out.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it opens up a little bit of a Pandora's box and maybe gives other golfers the opportunity to say, well, I don't like when people say this. We should make this term disallowed as well. For you as such a big golf guy, what do you find is the most annoying of the, say, heckles, where people yell Baba Booey, they yell, you know, get in the hole as soon as you tee off on like a five par? What term do you think is the most annoying that people love to yell at golf events?
Interesting question, Luke.
I thought you'd have one that would stand out to you.
And the reason why I ask that is that there are times where some of these things, like, for example, I hate Baba Booey. I hate mashed potatoes.
Yeah.
Like, can we please change? But occasionally you'll get, like, Roll Tide yelled out for Justin Thomas. Mm-hmm. And if it's timed right, and if he's playing with, let's say, Kevin Kisner, who's a Georgia grad, and they have a long-standing fun football rivalry with Betts, and the loser had to wear the other shirt for one hole at the Sony Open one year after Bama played Georgia in that national title game. You know, like, there I can see where it's fun. Somebody years ago yelled at Phil Mickelson right after a shot, "You hit a fairway," and Phil's like, "Hey, I just want to announce to everybody that, yes, I can hit a fairway." So there's moments where it can happen. I'm not in favor of banning a certain thing because in the right context, it can be used correctly. But, yeah, Baba Booey and mashed potatoes need to be eradicated.
Yeah, period. I agree with you. The ones that, yeah, have become like the cliche that people are always just yelling, they think it's funny, I agree with you. And I love Howard Stern, and he's a legend and everything they've done, but the whole Baba Booey stuff has played out over 25 years. Enough of that. Retire that phrase from all sports. Talking with Jeremy Schilling, as we do every Wednesday. Follow him on Twitter, at Jay Schill, our resident golf expert. So we have the Tour Championship coming up now this weekend, beginning tomorrow. How is the Tour Championship maybe unique in terms of scoring as we get ready to go this weekend?
Yeah, which I will happily get to momentarily. Can I just add one more thing on fan behavior?
Yeah.
Okay. There is an alcohol component of this, and Jay Monahan was not asked yesterday about the alcohol component, but I wonder, having broadcasted so many games, Luke, if you believe that cutting off alcohol sales at a certain time would make a difference.
That's a good question. I don't know how big of a impact. I mean, I guess it doesn't hurt. I've always wondered how big of an impact that truly has. My thought was always cutting it off at, like, baseball games in the seventh inning stretch. I always thought it was the best to allow people to try to, if they're going to try to drive home, you know, to sober up a little bit.
Right.
But I've always wondered how big of an impact that truly has. I think that may just force people to stockpile a little bit early on. So I wish they did a study to see if that limits alcohol consumption or not, or if people just consume the alcohol a little bit different or quicker, knowing that it's going to be cut off at a certain time. It can't hurt, but I don't know how much that helps.
Yeah. Something tells me the folks in Ponte Vedra Beach at PGA Tour headquarters are probably launching those studies right now to figure out what are the ways, because that is also a big component of this. And as Patrick Cantlay said today, you can have, you know, in a crowd of 10,000 people, you can have 9,992 in favor of you, but if the eight are the drunkest and loudest people who are negative, that'll shine out more than the support of 9,992. Anyway, Tour Championship, great golf fans in Atlanta. Staggered strokes, starting strokes, scattered scoring, handicap system, whatever you want to call it. Patrick Cantlay, by virtue of that win, earned enough FedEx Cup points to come in with a two-shot lead. So he enters the Tour Championship with a two-shot lead over Tony Finau, by three over Bryson DeChambeau, four over John Rahm, five over Cam Smith, and then six over a bunch of guys, which include Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth. And it slides down to those at the bottom, who are at even par. Basically, the point is, Cantlay has earned this. He's going to have an advantage, one trophy, one winner, easy to follow for the fans at home. That's the theory behind this. What I will say is twofold, something to look at on the very bottom of the leaderboard. Patrick Reed, who has been out with double pneumonia and an ankle injury, snuck in at number 30. A whole bunch of guys around him did not play well last week down the stretch, including K.H. Lee, who hit in the water on 18. So he is returning this week and is definitely somebody to watch. Then we have Erik van Rooyen. If you want to talk about the hottest player in these playoffs, it's probably Erik van Rooyen, who shot a very, very low round on Sunday at Caves Valley and comes in with a whole lot of momentum. He's playing with house money. He's now qualified for everything. He's not supposed to be here. He was 139th in the FedEx Cup before he won the Barracuda last month. So he's playing with all kinds of house money here. So those are the guys that at the bottom I would watch. Towards the top, obviously, Patrick's got this lead. But Tony Finau shot a Sunday 63, and he comes in two shots behind. And I'm telling you, this is a golf course that if it plays soft, and they have had some rains related to Ida over the last couple of days, if it plays soft early on, his distance will have a big advantage. Two shots over 4 days is not a lot to make up. I really like Tony Finau this week.
I think the real question is, though, how many playoff holes is it going to take to actually win this thing? I think that's the better question than who's actually going to
win. It is only fitting that a year that has had 14 playoffs, 40 holes played, and four consecutive playoffs would end, and sorry, not a year, a season, excuse me, with that. My question is, when we start up again in 2 weeks at the Fortinet Open, does the same trend continue? Because at that point, I think I'll have a better answer for the question of why is this happening than I did a couple weeks ago when I, you know, kind of gave you my theory. I think we're on to a consistent trend here, which we'll get to in a couple weeks.
All right, sounds good. He's Jeremy Schilling on Twitter at Jay Schill, a resident golf expert. Before we let you go, last thing, other than just what we have going on with the Tour Championship this weekend, is there something else in the golf world happening this week?
Yes, yes, yes. The women's version of the Ryder Cup, the Solheim Cup, U.S. versus Europe. This is a stacked U.S. squad going up against the European squad that's going to come in as the underdogs, playing at Inverness, a very famous golf course outside of Toledo, Ohio, that has been recently renovated, restored to its greatness. This is the real debut, I would say, for this course on a national scale. And the thing that I would look at is that when you look at this European squad, they are young. They are very, very young. They have, you know, a whole bunch of assistant captains who were their bread and butter forever. There's a lot of pressure on Anna Norquist, Charlie Hull, and Carlotta Segonda to give them that edge. Meanwhile, for the U.S., Nelly, Danielle Kang, Lexi, the Cordes sisters, Lizette Salas, Jennifer Kupcho. I mean, it just goes on down the line. Yet match play is the great equalizer. So look for that this week on Golf Channel and NBC in addition to the Tour Championship.
So, great weekend of golf here with week one of college football. Plenty of great sports going on this weekend. He's Jeremy Schilling on Twitter at Jay Schill, our resident golf expert who writes for PGA Magazine and joins us every Wednesday at this time to talk some golf. Jeremy, appreciate the time as always, and we'll do it again next week.
You were literally going to have me on for 17 minutes and not bring up that your Vikings traded for the Jets' Chris Herndon yesterday?
Yes, please tell me. Is he going to be the savior? Is he going to come in? He's the missing piece, right? That now they're going to win a Super Bowl. Now that they've traded a fourth-round pick for this tight end, now we're looking at a Super Bowl team, right? Please tell me. Yes? Yep.
Right. No, he had a great rookie year and never lived up to the hype after that. And you lost somebody else today, I believe, to a knee injury.
Yeah, I mean, before this, it's typical Viking season. Before the year even begins, they're already, you know, letting you down. So we'll see.
Chris Herndon has a lot of upside, but his down is not a high down. Big floor, high ceiling and a low floor. I think that's the correct way of saying it. Yeah. So if they can get him to, you know, be consistent game to game, whether it's high production or low production, that's a win for you guys. He's got a lot of upside, but he can also disappear, and that's not helpful from a tight end position.
No, certainly not. Not quite the upgrade either in franchises from the Jets to the Vikings for Mr. Herndon, but we'll see. He's Jeremy Schilling on Twitter at Jay Schill. Joins us every Wednesday. Appreciate the time, Jeremy. We'll do it again next week.
You got it. Take care, everybody.
Likewise. Appreciate the time as always. Yeah, not that you care about the Vikings. I am a Vikings fan. But Irv Smith, who I was just thinking back yesterday. I was going through old spotting boards from past Citadel broadcasts, and I came across the Alabama one from 2018. What a stacked team that was, where you have the three quarterbacks, Tua, Jalen Hurts, and Mac Jones. And I had notes for Mac Jones because I knew we would see him in that game. I had no idea who he was at the time, but I knew he's going to play against the Citadel. And the wide receivers, you had Jerry Jeudy and Devontae Smith, and Henry Ruggs and Jalen Waddle were the four top wide receivers. And then the running backs, you had Damian Harris, Josh Jacobs, and Najee Harris. And I have Irv Smith on there as one of their H-backs, who ended up having the biggest game of them all against the Citadel that day. Irv Smith was really good. But what a stacked team. And it's amazing that it was a 10-10 game in the second half, the Citadel and Alabama. You look at that team, and on the offensive line as well, Jedrick Willis and Alex Leatherwood were their two tackles. They're both in the NFL. I think they were both first-round picks. Right, Jonah Williams on the offensive line. I mean, that offense was stacked. almost pretty similar to 2001 Miami. But my point being, I was looking at that yesterday and saw, Irv Smith, and it reminded me of the great game he had against the Citadel, and he just underwent knee surgery. He's out for the year for my Minnesota Vikings. I thought he was poised for a big year. I like Irv Smith a lot. Irv Smith Jr., in fact. So they went out and traded for Chris Herndon from the Jets. Can't hurt. I don't know how much he's going to help this year, but can't hurt. Him and Tyler Conklin will now be the two tight ends for the Vikings. All righty, before the season begins, Justin Jefferson's banged up. Adam Thielen's banged up. Irv Smith's out for the year. The life of a Vikings fan. Looking forward to the start of the NFL season a week from tomorrow, though. When we come back, speaking of the NFL, a couple of coaches with some interesting comments yesterday. We'll get to something Shane Beamer said in a little bit, but when we come back, since I got on the subject of the NFL, let's get to Urban Meyer when we return. Did he put his foot in his mouth once again? We'll do that next. The Morrow Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Coming up, did Urban Meyer put his foot in his mouth again? It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Appreciate the time. Last segment from Jeremy Schilling as we talk golf with Jay Schill every Wednesday here on the show. And if you ever miss anything from the show, such as that conversation or the one we had last hour with former head of NFL officiating Dean Blandino, you can always check it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston however you listen to your podcasts. Podcasts are also available online at charlestonsportsradio.com or through our free app. Just search ESPN Charleston in the App Store. Yesterday was National South Carolina Day, and so we played all sorts of music from musicians from South Carolina. I still don't know why yesterday was National South Carolina Day, but we celebrated around here, and I'm always prideful of the area in which I live. Right? I grew up in Connecticut. People would always complain. I have great pride in Connecticut. Then I lived in Florida. Took great pride. I lived in upstate New York. I wasn't very prideful about that because that was not the best place to live. But everywhere I've gone, right, I always take pride in where I am. So yesterday, National South Carolina Day, I celebrated as well. Today is the most random day, however, for national days. And these are all very random, but today specifically. Today is National Burnt Ends Day. I have to be honest, this is where my mind goes. I initially, for some reason, I was thinking about hair, but obviously the burnt ends, you know, when you talk about barbecue. So go out and get yourself some burnt ends today for National Burnt End Day. But it doesn't stop there. It's also National Acne Positive Day. That's a good thing. I remember in the 90s, Nickelodeon had All That, the TV show All That. They had a character on the show because it took place, one of the skits would take place like in high school. And they had the character on the show called Pizza Face. I don't think that is something you could get away with in 2021, and it was a children's show, and to have a character named that, right, because of that term, I don't think you could do that today. I don't think that would go over very well. But you know, about 25 years ago, nobody thought it was funny. But it's National Acne Positivity Day, and it's National Chicken Boy Day. Now, what is Chicken Boy? That is honoring the birthday of an interesting statue in California of a guy with a chicken head holding a bucket, which was put up in the 60s for the Chicken Boy restaurant along Route 66. Now it has its own holiday. So every September 1st is National Chicken Boy Day, and it's also National No Rhyme Nor Reason Day. So go out and do whatever. It doesn't matter. You don't need rhyme or reason to get it done. Just happy National No Rhyme Nor Reason Day on September 1st. So we always have the most random, quote-unquote, national holidays, but especially today. Those are some. That's just an odd combination. National Burnt Ends Day, National Chicken Boy Day, National No Rhyme Nor Reason. Joe, what's your favorite Dave Matthews Band song, and why is it Rhyme and Reason?
That is not applicable to me.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. But you know, in fact, Dave from Georgetown just called and said one guy that was left off is Whispering Bill Anderson.
Oh.
He was a DJ in Columbia. He's not sure if he was from South Carolina, but he was working in Columbia as a DJ, as a radio DJ. This is the years before, you know, DJs were synonymous with nightclubs, you know, and that kind of stuff. But yeah, he supposedly he said had a like a soft whispering singing style.
Yeah,
he was a country artist, whispering Bill Anderson.
Interesting.
And of course, you being a '90s guy,
yes.
Lisa Left Eye Lopez.
Oh yeah,
has some family in the Adams Run area, I believe.
Oh.
Yeah, she has some relatives down there. Then of course, locally, our sister station WJNI regularly plays songs by Jarrell Smalls.
Uh-huh.
Who's from North Charleston, and actually a few years ago, he did an impromptu set during Cross High School's homecoming football game.
Hmm.
And also, Kalante Gavin is from Somerville.
Oh.
And then something that Terry Bass told me yesterday after the show,
yeah.
One of the real singers on Milli Vanilli's infamous album was from Edgefield.
Oh, how about that? The real Milli Vanilli. Not the posers that they had stand in front of the cameras. So how about that? Yesterday, National South Carolina Days, we played music from all sorts of musicians from South Carolina. Today is National No Rhyme Nor Reason Day. And this website that I get all these national days from acknowledges that September celebrates many random days. Yeah, I would say. Most of these quote-unquote national holidays are incredibly random. But for National No Rhyme Nor Reason Day, they give a list of songs that, or I should say words that can't be rhymed. They're unrhymable in our English language, such as orange. I guess no word rhymes with orange. Month, silver, spirit, chimney, purple, woman, ninth, and pint. Those are the, how many, 9 words in our language that apparently you can't rhyme any other word with. Orange, month, silver, spirit, chimney, purple, woman, ninth, pint. Words that have nothing that rhymes with them. That's interesting. And apparently those are the 9. So happy No Rhyme Nor Reason Day.
Actually, there is a band called Rhymes with Orange.
Huh. That's
and
funny.
Also, I think I just found it. Krista Borden is a singer who came here. This was in the late 2000s when we had a station called Chick FM. But that's what 98.9 was when I first started working here.
Interesting.
And she had an album and a song called I Rhyme with Orange. And she came, and she actually came in, and I think she did a set and even cut some liners for Chick FM.
Oh. Now, there was a thing when you used to try to, I don't know if it's radio, if I could say, I'm sure I could say it on the radio, it's not a swear or anything, but purple is one of the words that doesn't have a word that rhymes with it. It's not officially a word of the English language, right? But when you used to try to inflict pain on somebody and you would grab a man by the chest, right? What would you used to call that? Purple? And there was a word that rhymes with it. It's not, I don't think it's a bad word. I just want to make sure I don't say something on the radio that will get us fined or something. Because you can't say what that actually is. You can't say what that body part is on the radio. You're not supposed to say that. So I will just refrain. Now, that's not an official word, but that is a word that you use that rhymes with purple. But purple is one of the 9 that has no word that rhymes with it, apparently. 9 words in our language that has nothing that rhymes with it. So there you go. Anyways, Urban Meyer spoke with the media yesterday, as yesterday was the cutdown day in the NFL. You had to get the rosters down to 53 players. And Urban, since taking over in Jacksonville, has had quite a few slip-ups. Maybe you hold the Tebow fiasco against him. Obviously, the strength and conditioning coach. We've got stories that players are unhappy with his coaching style already. He has said some maybe dumb things along the way. You know, realizing that this is not Ohio State, this is not Florida. You can't keep murderers on the team, right? You can't get away with everything. You're under a little more scrutiny in the NFL. You can't just say anything. There's going to be pushback. So this was Urban yesterday talking to the media about the roster cutdowns and something unique to the NFL this year that played a role in their decisions.
That was part of the production. What's his, you know, let's start talking about this. And then also, is he vaccinated or not? Can I say that that was a decision maker? It was certainly
so Urban Meyer saying that vaccination rate was a decision maker. And people were, the NFLPA was upset, this and that. It's something that we knew was happening. Urban just happened to put it out there. I said it on the show earlier this summer that when it came to those bubble players, right, where you could go either way on a guy, for spot number 53 on the roster, and you're trying to choose between him and him, and there's not a big difference between the two players, but one's vaccinated, the other isn't, yeah, I would expect teams would take the vaccinated player, so it wouldn't be something they'd have to worry about, where the 53rd guy in your roster could cause you to have to forfeit a game. I'm sure all teams considered this. As I said on the show yesterday, I do think it played a role in the Patriots choosing Mac Jones over Cam Newton and then releasing Cam. Because it's like, well, if he's going to be a backup, we don't want our backup quarterback causing us to have to forfeit a game if he's not even going to have to play in the game. So I do think it's something. Coaches just wouldn't be bold enough to come out and actually say it, put it out there. You know, like there's things that we always will do in life that you just don't want to publicly acknowledge. That you may make a decision based off of one reason or another, but you don't want to say why. Right? You may not want to. Well, I'll meet you there. Right, you're going on a trip with the in-laws. I'll meet you there. I got to work. I got to meet you there Saturday. Right, really, it's just you want to spend less time with the in-laws. But you know, you can't put that out there. And the wife may suspect it, and you know that's the reason why you're making the decision. But once you let those words come out of your mouth, you can't take it back, and then she can hold that against you moving forward about how you didn't want to spend the whole week with the in-laws. Right, like we all know what's going on here, but you still can't say it outwardly because then we have that to hold against you. We all know NFL teams are using this to make their decisions, but nobody until Urban yesterday was willing to come out and actually say that that played a role because now we can hold it against you. And the NFLPA is not very happy, and the NFLPA said something along the lines of, like, we're going to look into this, and the Jaguars had to release a statement about it. There's really not much the players can do. There's no sort of rule on the books that they can try to point to punish the Jaguars or Urban Meyer, but it does not help that relationship between the players and the league when the teams are saying, right, that, hey, this is the decision we're making. But the NFL is that type of, you know, they're a private company. It's a business. They can make their rules and make their decisions. And as I said on the show yesterday, I do think it played a role in regards to Cam Newton, and I would not want to give my employers the opportunity or the reason to try to move on from me. I always try to be the least difficult person I could. You know, if I was firing off complaint emails here at work all the time and I was yelling at coworkers and giving everybody a hard time being a thorn in the side of the higher-ups and always coming to them with, you know, asking for things or, hey, can we do this? Can we do that? I need more of this. Whatever. You know, when your contract's up, they may be like, yeah, you know what? We're going to go in a different direction. This guy causes us a lot of problems. Let's go try to find somebody else who doesn't cause so many problems. So I always try to be as low maintenance as possible because, well, that's just how I am in my regular life. But also, you don't want to be the difficult person at work. Nobody wants to be that difficult person. You don't want to give your boss more reasons to try to move on from you or not bring you back or, you know, try to get rid of you. You're like, yeah, he's an okay worker, but he's very difficult. People don't like to deal with difficult people. And so in this case, not that certain players are being difficult, but it's just another thing that these coaches would have to worry about. Like, yeah, he's an average player, but then, you know, we also have to worry about a potential outbreak that could cause us to forfeit a game. You don't want to give your boss more reasons to not choose you or to try to move on from you. And I'm sure this is something that all teams thought and did. Urban was just the only one to be bold enough to come out and just say it up, you know, be up front with it. Yeah, we did consider that in our decision-making when cutting down our roster. Did not make some of the players too happy, but really not much they can do about it either. Speaking of coaches at the podium, Shane Beamer had a message yesterday that I loved, a message for the Gamecocks. And we'll get to that when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Shane Beamer, I thought, had a great message for the Gamecocks yesterday. And really, anyone else in sports listening. It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. We'll get to our SEC conference preview and breakdown next hour as we run through the Power 5 conferences this week in college football leading up to week one starting tomorrow night. It's quite the weekend. Great weekend of college football. You also have Labor Day on Monday. Hopefully you're off. We will be off. No Morrow Midday Show on Monday. And we'll react on Tuesday to everything from the football weekend. So enjoy the weekend and take it easy on yourself. That's the whole idea of Labor Day. Right? You've been laboring all year. That's the one day. Kick your feet up, relax a little bit. Let Home Team do the work this holiday for you instead. Home Team Barbecue can cater your Labor Day celebrations or even pick up some Home Team Barbecue for the games on Saturday if you'll be sitting at home watching them. Smoked wings, ribs, pulled pork, sides, and more. View the full menu online at hometeambarbecue.com. Game Changer Mix is available. You just need to add the rum, and they give them a 24-hour notice by calling them or emailing catering at hometeambarbecue.com. Home Team Barbecue, let them cater your Labor Day celebrations this weekend or your Week 1 college football viewing this weekend as well. Shane Beamer had his press conference yesterday. I love that he was, when talking about Zeb stepping in as their quarterback this week, and said he's not some sort of Uncle Rico, right, from Napoleon Dynamite. Some has-been who played years ago and says, I could throw that football over that mountain. This kid did play a few months ago. I like that reference with Uncle Rico. But he also had this to say yesterday, and I thought this was a great message from Shane Beamer yesterday during the press conference.
Obviously, the topic of conversation, what everyone is here today and wants to talk about is our uniforms. And what we're credit Fink on that one. He actually mentioned doing that. So very good, Fink, is our uniforms. We're going to wear white helmets, garnet jerseys, and white pants on Saturday night. So there is your uniform reveal for the week. We are very thankful that Under Armour takes great care of us and gives us a lot of uniform options and combinations. But we're not going to get into every single week spending time and wasting a whole lot of time as a team trying to figure out what we're wearing on Saturdays. Let's worry about how we play.
Shane Beamer yesterday. I love that message. Now, I may sound like the old man yelling at the clouds, right? Because it's kind of the younger generation is into this. It's a big recruiting thing. In fact, when they have you on campus, right, you see these funny and awkward photos online of, like, the parents getting into the uniforms. Take it easy, right? It's your son recruitment. It's not yours. But you see these photos of the parents getting into the jerseys, and they post the photos online, and, oh, my kid visited Oregon this weekend. All right, well, you're not being recruited. Your kid is. Get out of the jersey. You're not going there to play football. But that's a big thing. It's a recruiting pitch, and it's all about, you know, which company are you with? Are you an Adidas school? Are you a Nike school? Oh, look at that cool stuff, cool uniforms. It's certainly appreciated. You know, I would appreciate, if I was an athlete, cooler uniforms than some sort of ugly things, but all I need is a home and a road, and let's go. I don't need a different combination every week. I need to worry about it. And I like that message from Shane Beamer that, you know, talking about a program that was 2-8 last year. Like, let's focus on winning games first instead of, hey, what jersey are we going to wear? That's not a top priority. It doesn't matter. Now, some will say the old saying of dress good, or whatever it is, look good, feel good, play good. So it's important to have the right uniform combination. I've never been into that. I think a little over the top at some of these schools that have their 100 different uniform combinations and they wear a different uniform every week and some of them look terrible. I'm more of a traditionalist. I said that I complained about this with the NBA. When I turn on an NBA game, I want to know right away within seconds and without looking at the scoreboard who's playing. I don't want to look at the Hawks wearing, you know, these black jerseys and the Knicks are in like baby blue and the Milwaukee Bucks in the playoffs this year wore blue jerseys. I thought they were always green. Like, what's going on here? Who's who? Who's playing? Who is playing in this game? I got to look at the scoreboard and, oh, the Lakers against the Nets. And then I still don't know because traditionally home teams wear white and that doesn't happen anymore. I'm like, oh, you know, which jersey are the Lakers wearing? I've never seen them wear this before. Enough of all these crazy jerseys. Let's keep with traditions. Growing up, I never played sports beyond high school. Happy there were kids that would have like different shoes that they would wear depending on the uniform or just have multiple shoes over the court. We would buy, for basketball, we'd buy one pair of sneakers. That was it. In fact, I remember wearing the same pair of sneakers for years. I think they were the Vince Carter sneakers. Those were my basketball shoes for like 3 years until they couldn't fit anymore. I'm not into, oh, our jerseys changed this year. I got to go get some matching shoes. No, I don't care. Never cared about any of that stuff. In fact, story time. Here on the Morrow Midday Show. When I worked in minor league baseball, 99% of the athletes I worked with, and even the former athletes that would come around, right, were great. But there are always a few that are a real pain in the ass. And there's one guy in particular, I won't say his name, but he's in the big leagues now. He plays out on the West Coast. He's in the big leagues now. He was probably the most annoying minor league player I've ever dealt with. He was a real pain, very annoying. Most of his teammates didn't like him either. He was the type of guy that on the bus trips, he would be listening to music and rapping out loud, like with headphones on. People would be trying to sleep. They'd be quiet. He's rapping the songs he's listening to at the top of his lungs on the bus. People would have to tell him to shut up. And it was just an annoying teammate, an annoying person. But one thing that was, for me in particular, very annoying was he was so concerned about the music in batting practice before the game. He would come up to the press box. He would walk off the field, up the stands, up the press box. He would come into the press box and complain about the music that's on during batting practice. I'd say, get down there and focus on the game tonight. You're trying to make it to the big leagues, which he has since done. Don't worry about the music being played. And yeah, sure, maybe it helps you get into a mood. It's why we listen to music when we go to the gym. And it helps you pass the time, and it helps you get amped up for what you're going to do. But focus on the batting practice and the game that night. And that used to drive even me crazy. Like, stop coming up here, complain about the music. Pay attention to the batting practice and the game you have in 2 hours. That's more important. They're paying you a lot of money to go out there and play well and eventually make it to the big leagues. Now, why don't you focus on that? That should be your top priority. Don't worry about what music is being played at the stadium. Because, by the way, you're not the only person here, right? You have to play music for the fans coming in. And it has to be family-friendly, and it has to be welcoming. And we didn't have a DJ. We would put on a playlist. Oh, the team's going out for batting practice? All right, throw on the playlist, and it'd be off of Spotify or just the computer. You play random music. He would even throw baseballs up at the press box to try to get our attention. And we'd be yelling at the press box. Like, yeah, put on better music. Put on this guy. Let's listen to this guy. Just focus on the game. Focus on batting practice. So I love that idea from Shane Beamer. Like, not every week are we going to come in here and debate about the best combo for our jersey this week. And how unique we can get, and oh, how clever, what can we do this week? Hey, how about we do this? How about this coming in? No, focus on winning. That's the task at hand. And if you start building up that program, and you don't have to worry so much about trying to win a game, then you can worry about the uniforms. That's second, right? That comes after the success. You get to enjoy the fruits of your labor after you actually start accomplishing something. You get to kick your feet up, right? You get to go on vacation after you have a successful year, or after you get your footing at a company. You don't take a new job and then take a long weekend the first week on the job. Yeah, you gotta do something first before you start worrying about all that other stuff. So I like that idea. Maybe old school. I know the newer generation may be more into these different jersey combinations and how the team looks. What I care about is how you look in the standings and on the scoreboard. Don't worry so much about what you're wearing. Go win the games. There's that one minor leaguer, the only guy in my entire career, 7 years in minor leagues, only one player ever complained about the music, and it was him. Instead of focusing on batting practice, right, he would walk all the way up to the press box and complain about the music out of the stadium. Like, go focus on your game. Don't worry about it. Now, I guess ironically enough, he made it to the big leagues. He's been in the big leagues, although he's like a career 160 hitter in the big leagues, maybe too focused on the music. I won't say his name, but he was the most annoying and most disliked player I ever dealt with in the minor leagues. And he's in the big leagues now playing on the West Coast. Coming up, we'll wrap up hour two. I do have to circle back to this Bishop Sycamore story that I mentioned briefly on Monday. Never got back to it yesterday. And with each day, we're getting more and more odd information about this crazy school. We do have to get to that coming up. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Wrapping up hour two here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. On Monday, I mentioned this story about Bishop Sycamore, and things have just unraveled even more since. To get you caught up, in case you're unfamiliar, ESPN was broadcasting some high school football games over the weekend. And Sunday night, we saw IMG Academy play this Bishop Sycamore team and beat them 58-0. And the broadcasters, mid-game, were wondering, what's going on? How did this team get in this game? Bishop Sycamore sold themselves as this elite program from Ohio with a bunch of kids that are going to go on and play big time college football. And it turns out it was all a lie, right? And they were a bunch of nobodies. All due respect, they weren't a bunch of kids that were big time recruits. In fact, they had just played on Friday, 2 days prior. They were then playing against IMG Academy on a field in which they did not belong. And they previously in the week or the tournament, other games that are broadcasted, had given a roster with wrong names on it and had no jersey numbers for the broadcast, and nobody knew who anyone was, and they only had one set of uniforms. They had to share helmets, all this sort of stuff. And the details that have come out since, we've had parents of former players come out and complain about their experience. We've had details about some of the players in the teams who are former junior college dropouts now playing high school football, even though they're like 20 years old and they're supposed to be a junior in college and they're playing for this high school team. We had the head coach who was found to have like an arrest warrant out for fraud, I believe. And all the while, he's really frauding the members of this program with Bishop Sycamore. There is no Bishop Sycamore. It's a made-up name. The founder of the school said that Bishop means overseer, and he's the overseer. That's why it's Bishop Sycamore. I still don't know what that means because his name is not Sycamore. They have no address, no website, no social media accounts. They're selling themselves as this prep school that's going to get you into a Division I college football program. We'll do a great job. They don't have uniforms. They have kids that aren't even high school age or should be eligible to play. They've been lying to ESPN or others about, oh, yeah, these kids are going to play Division I football. The coach just got fired. I don't know how he got fired. There's really no one to fire him. There's only like two adults actually in charge of all this. All the while, they're taking money from families, promising them one thing and delivering nothing. It's actually a sad scam going on in Ohio. And somehow they got on national TV on ESPN on Sunday, and in the process, it exposed all this. There's a lot more details to all this, but a wild story about Bishop Sycamore and the scam they're running in Ohio. Hour 3 next. It's the More Midday Show on ESPN Radio.